to the R4R podcast. This is Karen Conley, and I am the executive director of Race for Reconciliation. And we're just excited that you're here with us for this particular episode. You have joined us for a really important episode in the journey of this new movement, Race for Reconciliation. I have with us, if you have been on our podcast before, you have probably seen the beautiful Vanetta West. If you're on video, you can see us on split screen right now. Vanetta, you are in warm, sunny Georgia. Thank you
for
joining us again today.
Thank you for having me. It is warm and sunny here.
Well, that's I'm recording this from Cleveland, Ohio, and we have sun but not warmth. So I appreciate sun and warmth more than I ever have before right now. So we are here today on what we're calling the five minors for Race for Reconciliation. And one of the things that we wanted to do is clearly define our purpose, our mission, and also some guardrails. This is a topic that is, you know, consistently a polarizing topic, a challenging topic, and Vanetta is going to help us as we have kind of defined what we're calling as five minors. Really what they are the things that we are not going to do. The ways that we can protect ourselves as a mission, as an organization, even with guests that we bring on and people that are involved with this, these things would represent how we would want to just keep our focus on the main thing and not get distracted or have sideways energy. And so, Vanetta, I want to share those five minors with you and then ask you, because as a woman who has walked in this space, by now people probably know a lot of your experience if they've listened to other podcasts, but you are a leadership consultant, you are a writer and author, you are an expert on Dr. King, you have studied and taught training, have led trainings on his material for almost 20 years now, a part of the King Center where you developed curriculum and their nonviolence 365 platform. So you know this space. And I wanted to learn from you and have your expertise help us as to understand why these things are so important that we really protect ourselves from. So the first one, and if you're watching by video, you'll see this pop up on the screen. But the first thing we're going to avoid is who had it worse. So in that, we're going to avoid comparing atrocities and attempting to weigh oppression. And Vanetta, as you think about that, could you maybe explain why kind of going down that train of thought, who had it worse, might take us in the wrong direction?
Well, it's just a never-ending conversation. You know, atrocity is just grave inhumanity. And atrocity is not a word, of course, that we use lightly. When you think about atrocities, you're thinking, for me, you know, the Holocaust, the transatlantic slave trade, and then slavery here in this nation, over a period of time, Jim Crow lynching, atrocities, things that have sought to extinguish culture and people, steeped in hate and discrimination and bigotry and racism, Japanese people in concentration camps, things like that, where it's not just I was uncomfortable or I had to deal with some issues. It's persecution. Mm-hmm. Not people are talking about me or they don't like me or they don't like to be affiliated with me. It's great harm has been caused to a group of people. And so those things, we can't compare them. And I've seen often people try to have a conversation around what was worse, slavery or the Holocaust. And I'm just like, what kind of conversation is that? I don't want to be a part of that simply because I want to ensure that we don't have either of them ever again. Mm-hmm. Because both were very detrimental, harmful, caused deaths of millions of people, shifted cultures where people couldn't find their family members. You know, those types of things, comparison doesn't help. What does help is to focus our energy on how do we ensure that we build community and equip humanity not to go back to those places. And so when I say they're unfruitful, that comparisons are, that's what I mean. They take our attention off of eradicating the things that cause those atrocities.
So good. And it is how we want to put our energy on being a part of the solution. And this protects us from just being overwhelmed by things we cannot go back and change. I appreciate you elaborating on it. The second one, it is equally important, and I think very pertinent to all of us in many fields, but especially in this space. The idea that we're going to avoid is the conversation about who does it better. You know, we avoid comparing activists and leaders and instead pull useful tools and thoughts that accommodate our vision and our voice. So, you know, more times than not, when we start to compare, it divides people instead of unifies. So how can we focus more on what we have in common than the differences?
Yeah, that's a difficult space, because especially if it's talking about and being applied to people who and organizations who are doing social justice work or racial reconciliation, there's a tendency to want to say this organization is doing it better. I think the question we have to start to ask is, one, how can we do it together? Mm. Two, if there's something that I believe should be done differently, then why don't I do it? These are hard questions that we start to ask ourselves, that we say, instead of me saying they're not doing that correctly, if I believe it's something that needs to be done differently, how do I help get it done? Mm. How do I let that organization focus on what they need to focus on? If they're not using language and if they're not using practices that are harmful, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just the habit of criticizing. Mm. This space of, we do that better. Even in terms of, you know, people will try to pull me into conversations to criticize Colin Kaepernick. I don't engage in those conversations. Unless I'm saying, hey, if he would have had this, he could have done it better. But if somebody is genuinely saying, I'm protesting racial injustice and police brutality, this is the Kingian approach, the approach of Dr. King. Let's talk about what they're protesting and how we can help with that. And then leave that conversation about how we do it, how he did it, for another time. So I'm always wondering, when we're talking about who does it better, what's being left out of, what energy are we depleting from actually working on that issue? In other words, the time that we spent discussing how Kaepernick protested, there were more Black people being killed in the streets and brutalized by police. So should my focus be more on that injustice, or looking at somebody saying, well, he shouldn't have knelt, he shouldn't have done this? But I think it's a distraction tactic, because the more I talk about who does it better or who's not doing it correctly, the more we don't spend time eradicating racism.
Well, and I would say it also keeps people from being engaged. If you can point and go, well, they do it wrong, so therefore I'm going to do nothing.
Right.
Because I don't want to be associated with it being done wrong. And all of a sudden we have rendered ourselves on the sidelines again, instead of saying, no, this is important. And I, again, back to our own culture and creating our personal values, that shouldn't, if we get distracted in the comparison, then we miss the focus of what's important.
Well, this is something we can start to ask people. And I ask, when people are just telling me they don't think somebody's protesting injustice correctly, like true injustice, not discomfort, they're not protesting injustice correctly, then I say, well, tell me about some of the work you're doing to eradicate injustice. Mm-hmm. That usually ends those conversations. Right. Because what you find is, you might just be dealing with somebody who wants to criticize somebody else's work to eradicate injustice, and they're not actually doing anything. That conversation's over. Because what it's saying to them is, hey, you know, you kind of don't, you can't even criticize in a space you're not participating in.
That's good. The third one is so important, hanging in hopelessness. So we want to avoid language and postures that rob us of hope, instead choosing to merge understanding of history and undergirding with hope. So I know on a personal level, all of us can kind of get to a place of the half empty, of the pessimism. And we can look at this on a more corporate level and just get overwhelmed and feel powerless. Describe that dynamic that we have in this third minor of merging both an understanding of history with the undergirding of hope. What does that mean?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes people think hope means being naive, but that's not what hope is. Hope is actually having a great knowledge of history and a great expansive knowledge of where we are now and still saying we can be better and we can do better. And what helps us be hopeful is being helpful. For me, nothing cultivates hope more in my culture, my atmosphere, and my character internally for me than being helpful. Now, if I become a person who I'm no longer contributing, I can't find a way to have some positive input, then I'm going to feel hopeless. And in the moments in my life where I felt hopeless, it's because I wasn't doing anything. There was nothing I was standing up to do to say, this is a way I can help. And I don't mean grand things. I just mean daily going into a grocery store and saying, hey, let me help you with that. The more we build a culture of giving and of helping and of addressing systemic issues, the more hopeful we become. Because little by little, you can see change in somebody's life if you help them. You can see change in an instant if you buy groceries for somebody who's digging through their purse for money and you see they don't have the money. You instantly can start to cultivate hope in those moments. And then you can go home and say, let me continue to cultivate this hope by looking at why there is poverty and looking at how to address this systemically. I mean, it takes being strategic to maintain hope and to not hang in hopelessness. And we have to actually say, for me personally, I'm going to create a culture of hope. I just really encourage people, based on what we talked about in a previous podcast, to say, what culture do I want around me? My personal culture. And if I say I want a culture where I'm hopeful and I'm not hanging in hopelessness, what things cultivate hope for me? And that could be music. That for me, a great song can help cultivate hope for me. I have playlists that I have for different occasions where I say, hey, this is a encouragement playlist. Things like that, they may seem simple, but if I'm really committed to not hanging in hopelessness, I make a plan for how that happens for me.
I love the intentionality that you're speaking about. And I also love, just to be honest with you, a lot of what you're saying resonates with things that have existed in my life before my awareness and awakening in the whole area of racial reconciliation. And I hope that's an encouragement to people out there to say, this really isn't as foreign as you might think. If you're new to this conversation and you want to be a part of the solution, it's not impossible, but it is intentional and it is a discipline. But you can start making a difference in your grocery store, in your neighborhood, in your workplace. Like you don't have to be, you know, the director of training at the King Center to create an environment and a culture that promotes hope for you and hope for others around you in this space. So I love how individual we've made it and how, as we individually do this, we can collectively, with our hearts in the right place, come together and make a big difference. So I love what you said. Let me move on to the fourth one. This is harboring hatred. So let me read this to you. You can see it on the screen for video people. We avoid lingering on discord and hatred. Instead, facilitating conversations in a way that, within a strategic time frame, turns us to truth and reconciliation. So, Vanetta, you know this as a Black woman in a way that I don't as a white woman, but these conversations are deeply personal. And there are generations of Black families that have been hurt from years of a culture that didn't promote their welfare. So what would you say to help everyone involved to be able to engage in conversations that lead to what you talked about of at the end of that, we say, turns us to truth and reconciliation? How do you help us move from that topic of hatred to the reconciliation?
Well, I first share a quote from Coretta Scott King. She said, she expounds on a quote from Dr. King. He says, hate is too great a burden to bear. And she adds, it injures the hater more than it injures the hated. I believe that in my core, that hatred injures me when I facilitate it, when I hate people. And sometimes we think, oh, you just don't want to hate people. That's unloving. It's first and foremost unloving to me to hate people. When I hate people, I damage me. And I make myself corrupt. And I move myself into spaces, thinking spaces and emotional spaces where I can't function at my best. So it's in my best interest not to hate people. And to then say, how do we move towards truth? And how do we move towards justice? And how do we move towards true peace? Which Dr. King said is not merely, you know, the absence of tension, it's the presence of justice. How do we get to those spaces? And so I have to create that for myself. I have to ensure that I'm helping us to move forward. That doesn't mean I don't have moments where I experience bitterness, where I experience sometimes contempt, where I experience outrage. But I have to have an intent and be very intentional to cultivate that and move it into how do I not harbor hate in my heart, because that's going to damage me. And sometimes people, when we talk about words like forgiveness and we talk about not hating, they immediately think about, well, that other person did this and they don't deserve my forgiveness and they don't deserve for me not to hate them. No, no, no. This is about me damaging me and not being able to move forward and do the things that are positive and the things that help us shift and change as community and culture. And that's different than what I have to do that's going to let somebody off the hook. This is not about that. But I want to be a positive contributor in spaces, and I can't do that by harboring hatred in my heart.
Well, and as I listen to this and what you just said, I'll just say this as a white woman, but it does make me think, like, come on, we don't want to be uncomfortable. That's nothing compared to the emotions that most Black people have to overcome. You know, it's to your analogy the other day with the hands equal, like, this is like, as a person who has been in the majority culture my whole life, we have to move past that place of, oh, well, this is hard and uncomfortable, because it is nothing compared to if somebody in my family had mistreated my grandfather and that had been told to me and then told to, you know, to my parents and to me, I would harbor hatred if I didn't deal with it. And that happens in families of all races all the time.
Oh yeah. And so what I don't do is when I'm talking to people and they have hatred in their hearts, I don't listen to them talking about it and they're telling me how their uncles were lynched and they may be telling me how they had a relative who experienced police brutality because they were Black. I'm not that person talking to them saying, oh, you just really shouldn't hate. That's not how I deal with those situations. I listen to that person and what they're saying, and I listen to their hearts. And then I start to have conversation and I say, hey, you know, how is this making you feel? What are you doing with that? But I don't dismiss them feeling that at all. I mean, I think, wow, of course some people are going to feel hatred based on the things they're experiencing and they're learning about culture and society and systems.
And I really appreciate just your honesty and candidness through this conversation, because I really hope that it will open up the eyes and begin to cause some people who again, you know, just haven't stepped into, I want to be a part of the solution. I don't want anyone in humanity to be mistreated. And so, right. I think sometimes we wimp out on the white side and just go, ah, it just feels icky, and to go, oh, whoa, whoa.
Don't, of course it does.
Don't, yeah. But don't let that
yeah.
small amount of discomfort keep you from being a part of the solution. So the last one that we're going to look at today is what we're calling staying stagnant. Mm. And this is, we avoid remaining where we are emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, instead embracing movement as a part of racial reconciliation. And Vanetta, as I hand that fifth minor to you of staying stagnant, I would love for you to address it both to the person who maybe is listening and beginning to have a heart soften towards this subject and wants to become a part of the solution. But then also, would you address those that have walked in this space for a long time and that might be weary of how they also can apply this to this same, this principle?
Sure. You know, first, if there are people who are listening and you're thinking, I really want to become involved in this, or you're thinking, I haven't really done anything in this work, and you know, or you don't, I'm telling you, you're stagnant. Mm-hmm. You know, that you're in a space where you could be contributing to eradicating racism, mm-hmm. which has been a pervasive, systemic, cultural, overt evil. Not for too long, because 1 minute is too long, but it never should have been. Mm-hmm. And so you could be a part of shifting and changing that, deconstructing systems that are harmful and building systems in a way that care for people and don't discriminate against people. That's important work. And I think it only takes thinking about human beings and seeing people as human beings to come out of that. And it shouldn't take, you know, seeing an unarmed Black man gunned down in the street for that to happen and for us not to be stagnant anymore. It should just take, you know, us realizing that people are being mistreated, even though we can't see it, even though it might not be happening in our house or necessarily in our community. Racism is harming someone somewhere. And so we can't afford to be stagnant in that work. And we have to get from that place where we're saying, there's nothing I can do, to asking, what can I do? We Google. We're a Google culture. Get on Google and say, ending racism, put that in there, and just start to research and look at the different organizations that pop up. Then if you're people and you're tired, like last week, I was tired. I mean, I was just crying. I was a mess. And I was talking to different people. And in those moments, you know, I spent so much time encouraging people and coaching them and things that I needed people to say, hey, you know, we still can do this. Mm. And I did not believe that we could not do it. But I had moments last week based on a tragedy that happened right here in Georgia with a young Black man where I was saying, what are we going to do? Because this is something that continues to happen, and we keep working and we keep coming up with plans and we keep saying no justice, no peace. And I am spiritually, emotionally tired. And for me, I had to have a moment where I came back to my own culture. And I said, this is not what we do. You know, I do this for a day. But one of my mentors always told me, she said, you know what? I'm going to give you 3 days with that. Because even Jesus only stayed in the tomb for 3 days. And then he got up. So you need to get up. Mm-hmm. And so that's a part of my culture. Mm-hmm. If I give myself 3 days to be in something and to just feel it, by that third day, I need to be looking at, how do I get up? And mm-hmm. how do I stop being stagnant? And what did I see in this? And how can we change things based on what we're looking at? How do we need to show up in this instance of injustice that will help us in other instances? And maybe we can prevent it from happening again, which is always the goal. Mm-hmm. Because justice isn't just reactive. Justice is proactive. Mm-hmm. Justice means we put things in place to help this not happen again. And so, you know, being stagnant, it's another thing, again, that you have to say, this won't be culturally who I am. So if you've been doing this and you're saying, hey, I'm frustrated, I'm tired, create a culture again where you say, what do I do in those moments where I'm feeling that way? What have I established works for me? And again, this has to be, as Karen used this word, and I think it's so key, intentional. Not being stagnant has to be intentional.
Well, and I love the example that you just gave because, number one, it acknowledges humanity. You know, there are going to be days, you know, yes, in whatever you're passionate about, they're going to be, we live in a fallen world. It is a broken world. People will disappoint us. Mm-hmm. And we have to acknowledge that. We would be, you know, we've got to normalize that. But what you just said is, okay, I give myself 3 days. You give yourself permission to feel, to be at that place. But in that intentionality, part of the culture you created was choosing the people in your circle of influence so that you have people that will hold your arms up, that will speak truth to you, that will encourage you and will tell you, okay, Vanetta, it's day three, get up. We can do this thing.
I'll tell you, one of the people, for whatever reason, it continues to be amazing to me, but I can just be having, I was in South Africa and there was an injustice that happened while I was there. And Bernice King, Dr. King's daughter, she happened to call me and I just broke. And then the other day when this Ahmaud Arbery thing happened, when he was, you know, when we saw that video of him, you know, and a man standing on the truck and it looked like it was hunting season. And I saw this black man being shot and dying. And I called her again and I just broke. And she is one of the people for me that, when I'm in those spaces and I talk to her, I'm just like, I can just be fully transparent and say, this one is this terrible. And she immediately starts to say, West, because she has to, you know, typically our spaces, we're encouraging each other. We're talking about her father's philosophy. We're talking about how we can apply it. What she knows about me is if I've gotten to the place where I'm just weeping about something, then I really need for her to show up in a way that she doesn't normally show up in our conversations. And that for me is one of the relationships where I know I can be transparent about injustice, mm-hmm. about racism, because somebody's listening who's saying, okay, let's think about what we can do.
Right. Wow. Vanetta, you are an encourager and somebody who pours into so many in walking into difficult places and keep showing up and keep caring. And so I just want to thank you for the way that you've done that in my life and for the thousands of others that I know that you influence. Thank you for being a part of this series with us. I'm just hopeful that this will be a message that really, yes, it sets the foundation for who we are as Race for Reconciliation, but more than that, that it will inspire everybody who listens to become somebody who cares enough to take that next step and act.
Yes.
And I think hopefully there's opportunities to collectively come together through Race for Reconciliation events, but there are ways right where you are, no matter where you live, to become a part of the solution. And yes. Thank you for the ways you've outlined that individually of what that looks like in our lives, and for also painting the picture of how we need to be collective in our efforts to partner with everybody who has a heart for this and see that we actually eradicate racism. So thank you for your time, your expertise, your friendship. And we look forward to hosting you again at some point on this podcast. But thank you so much, Vanetta.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
Well, everybody that has joined us, thank you for being with us on this journey. And we pray that you would share it with other people and that you would be someone who takes this message with you and creates your own culture to carry this important message everywhere that you go. Please go to raceforreconciliation.org for more information and for helpful resources. We will continue to add to the website as we continue to build coalitions and point you to other resources that will be helpful. Have a great one, and until next time.